Pictured Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
I identify as a transgender woman.
I identify as a straight transgender female.
There is no such thing as transgender. You're either XX or XY.
But honestly, I don't really identify as human.
I'm tired of being humanized for the comfort of other people.
God made man male and female. That is determined genetically. That is physiology. That is science. That is reality.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
May we never lose our outrage.
I was convinced that this was the right decision, and I hated my body. I felt like, well, I'm already on the train. There's not really any getting off, and this is what'll make me happy. By June of 2017, I started testosterone. I believe the 22nd of September of 2017 is when I had my mastectomy. I don't want to see more kids be harmed and come out the other side living the way that I do.
This is Wretched Radio. May this story kindle a righteous indignation in all of us, lest we grow numb to all of the conversations that are happening on social media about transgender issues. Let's remember there are real people, real children, that are being so brutally harmed by these ridiculous, evil, wicked practices. I'm concerned that we'll begin to think of this issue very perhaps similar to abortion. We've perhaps lost the fire on that issue too. And sometimes we need to be stirred to remember little babies are getting ripped to shreds inside of their mother's womb, torn in parts and vacuumed out, so that we don't become callous to what is happening to millions of children every year around the globe. And so it is with transgender issues. The young lady featured in Independent Woman Features, it's iwfeatures.com, a number of videos, a number of stories of individuals who were brought into the supposed scientific process, which, as you will hear, was not scientific at all. And they were maimed. This is Layla Jane at the age of 12 because she was confused. They started pumping her with testosterone. At the age of 13, she had her first surgery done to her body, a mastectomy. At the age of 13, are you kidding me? Let us not lose, I think, the righteous indignation we should have when we hear stories like the story of Layla Jane.
I struggled with my mental health since the age of 6. I had suicidal ideation from at least second grade, and I never got adequate help for that.
Please note, she had suicidal ideations long before she was confused about her body, because the narrative that is so often chirped is that if you don't get your child underneath the knife and fill them with drugs, they're going to take their own lives. Their suicidal ideations, oftentimes, not all the times, are disconnected from their body issues. They are mental health issues, to use the vernacular of the secularist. They've got thinking that needs to be fixed, not their bodies needing to be maimed.
I think the reason I had suicidal ideation from such a really young age has to do with some childhood trauma that I endured, but also I think I'm just kind of someone who is prone to depression. So I first began to question my gender identity when I was 11 years old.
Let's do the math. Second grade, 11 years old. She had suicidal ideations long before she started being confused about her gender.
At the time I was going through puberty, I hit it a lot earlier than all of the other girls in my school, and it was really difficult to deal with. I was bullied, and part of my social difficulties had to do with my undiagnosed autism. I kind of turned to myself a lot, and I had unfettered internet access at that age.
There's another problem right there.
the internet access where there are people trolling and phishing all the time. And the algorithms that will feed this dreck to them. Let's just say this young lady went online to ask questions about her body. What's happening? Because she's going through puberty and perhaps it is early and perhaps she has nobody to talk to. Guess what starts popping up then in your feed? All these different fishers that start asking questions to take them down this dark road of transgenderism. That is why social media, I'm telling you, for children, it is so dangerous. And Layla Jane appears to be another victim.
I spent a lot of time on Instagram, and at first it was just for like niche communities around like video games, anime, and TV shows that I was into. And I began to see a lot of posts from Tumblr regarding LGBT issues trickle down into my Instagram feed. And that kind of planted the idea. It sounded like a really plausible way to escape being a woman, which was really scary to me at the time. I latched onto it as just an easy answer for my distress that I'd been experiencing. I did kind of socially transition when I was in sixth grade and had a couple of people call me by male pronouns and tried out a new name. I brought the idea to my therapist that I was seeing at the time, and she didn't tell my mom. I feel like they misinterpreted general discomfort around puberty as gender dysphoria. I didn't like that I was beginning to get male attention once I started to develop breasts, and I really wanted to hide it.
This is just heartbreaking.
Periods were really uncomfortable to cope with, especially at 9 years old, I think, is when I had my first one. I would have been fourth grade. So I definitely misinterpreted those feelings as gender dysphoria.
And nobody helped her to retranslate them. There's another video at independentwomenfeatures.com. It's Simon Amaya Price. The name of his video is Breaking Free from the Transgender Contagion. His dad wouldn't let him entertain those thoughts. His dad wouldn't let him go see somebody about his struggles. His dad wouldn't let him be exposed to these ideologies. And it spared him what Layla Jane was not spared from.
My therapist at the time didn't do any exploratory questioning and trying to find any of the root issues. My parents were very stressed and confused and thought that having a transgender child was akin to having a gay child. They just wanted me to be happy and healthy, whatever it meant. That therapist began to write out referrals for specialist doctors in the transgender field of medicine. I saw one fairly local specialist. It was a Kaiser Clinic. And she agreed with my therapist's diagnosis of gender dysphoria.
Probably took about 60 seconds. Okay, let's do it. What kind of kickback do I get on this? Anyway, how much do we?
And further affirmed me, but she said that I was too developed for puberty blockers and tried to prescribe me birth control to suppress the menstruation, but my body didn't respond very well to it. I was really nauseous and throwing up.
She's
I think
a
I
child.
Prescribed Lupron November of 2016 to prevent any further potential breast growth.
Lupron is the name of the drug. These people are insane that do this. They're just absolutely evil and insane. Now, perhaps they're blinded from their own ideology, but this could just not possibly be more. Here, honey. Here, 12-year-old girl, start taking this drug to keep you from developing the way that you were made.
And to stop my menstruation.
Ugh.
By June of 2017, I started testosterone. There's a lot that I wasn't told. The really not so obvious things, the not so fun things about it. In a way, I experienced some form of euphoria. However, you're going to feel kind of on top of the world when you're essentially taking a steroid. You feel a lot more energetic. Like I almost felt like I was manic, even though I'm not bipolar And it wasn't like full-blown mania, but that's the best comparison that I can draw. To trust a teenager with a drug that has addictive qualities, to do that by themselves, I don't feel like is fully responsible.
She's wrong. Wasn't a teenager. She was 12.
I believe the 22nd of September of 2017 is when I had my mastectomy.
Age 13.
The surgery was referred to with watered down terms such as top surgery. My parents were mostly listening to the doctors. My initial therapist gave them the dilemma of having a live son or a dead daughter.
Pants on fire. Remember the math that we did earlier. This is a young lady with struggles. And this is used. And by the way, it's study after study after study reveals that these kids, they do not get better suicidally once they've had these wicked procedures perpetrated on their bodies. They do not heal. Why? Because their body isn't the problem. It's not an external issue. It is an internal struggle. Outraged yet? If not, we should be. Because what is happening right underneath our noses is, I was going to say evil, not strong enough, demonic, hellish, wicked. This is Wretched Radio.
History is full of kings, and every single one of those kings, well, they're gone now. Except one. One king continues to reign, and Exalt the King with Todd Friel is a weekly podcast about that very king. Todd is the pastor of Alpharetta Bible Church, and every single week he takes a passage of scripture and he preaches it the way it was meant to be preached, until you can see Jesus in all of his beauty and glory. And Todd will be the first to tell you, he's after more than just your attention. He preaches to stir your heart, because a king this glorious deserves to be loved, and a heart that loves him follows him gladly. So come and hear for yourself what happens when the Word of God lifts Christ up where he belongs. Exalt the King with Todd Friel. There's a new episode every week wherever you listen to podcasts or on FortisPlus.org.
Is it possible a Christian university can actually be ranked high when it comes to preparing students for the real world? Hat tip to Masters University. You want to send your kids someplace where they actually still teach the Bible? Not just based on a document that they maybe have in a file cabinet someplace, but they actually use the Bible there. The education at the Masters University, not only biblical, but oh so practical. Courses, diplomas, degrees, they can be achieved online or, of course, on their beautiful campus in Southern California. Would you like to learn more about the Masters University to prepare you or your child for the future? I encourage you to visit masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
You've tried everything. You've sent articles, you've had the conversations, you've probably argued more than you wanted to, but you have a loved one who is still neck deep in the prosperity gospel or the new apostolic reformation, and nothing you seem to say gets through. It's exhausting, I know, and it's also heartbreaking. Snatch Them from the Flames was made for exactly this reason. Todd Friel and Justin Peters sit down and they tackle why your loved one is attracted to these movements in the first place, because until you actually understand that, you're just going to be swinging in the dark. Then they walk through the things that you can actually say and do to help pull them toward Christianity. This isn't about winning an argument. It's about understanding someone you love and pointing them to something real. If you've got a family member or a friend caught up in a false gospel and you don't know what else to try, Snatch Them from the Flames is for you. It's streaming for free right now on Fortis Plus. Download the app on your smartphone, your smart TV, or simply go to fortisplus.org.
God has given the church many gifts for the building up of the body. One gift is exhortation, the spiritual ability to encourage, comfort, and admonish God's people. whether God's people are oppressed, confused, or in error, God has provided the gift of exhortation to comfort, urge, and correct them. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
I believe the 22nd of September of 2017 is when I had my mastectomy.
Age 13.
The surgery was referred to with watered down terms such as top surgery. My parents were mostly listening to the doctors. My initial therapist gave them the dilemma of having a live son or a dead daughter.
Lies, lies, and more lies. This is Wretched Radio. DailySignal.com. NIH-funded study finds puberty blockers failed to improve youth mental health. This is just one of many studies. The impact of early medical treatment of transgender youth. National Institute of Health. The study included people as young as 8 years old. What in the why? Wait, what? How are we studying 8 year olds? You mean we're letting 8 year olds tell us what is right about their bodies? And we're assuming that they should be given these puberty blockers at the age of 8? The sample receiving puberty blockers included participants up to age 16, while the sample receiving hormone treatments included participants up to age 20. Over 2 years of medical intervention that started with blockers, mental health remained relatively stable and was on par with the population at large. Lying. They're lying. Their mental health will improve. Their suicidal ideations will decrease. Lies, lies, lies. The report's release has been long awaited. Why? The New York Times first reported in late 2024 that the study of almost 100 children would not be published because it was feared that the findings would be weaponized. Weaponized? How's about just used? How's about, isn't that what science is all about? Shouldn't there be some transparency? We're going to hide these study findings because it doesn't actually fit our narrative. And how do we get away with squelching this information? Larry, what do you got? Tell them that they're going to weaponize it. Good, Larry. Good. Excellent. Now we don't have to reveal this study. The study, by the way, also found potential effects on youth bone density, reproductive health, and height. Nevertheless, we keep pumping kids full of them simply because they're confused, just like this young lady, Layla Jane. It's a story from Independent Woman Features, iwfeatures.com, and it is my hope that we will hear this young lady share her journey, and we will be outraged.
I wanted to just pass and live as a boy and have nobody know. I didn't have to do a whole lot of convincing. My parents just really wanted me to be happy. I was convinced that this was the right decision, and I hated my body. I hated binding, but if I didn't bind, I would have people be able to see that part of me, and I didn't want that. I felt like, well, I'm already on the train. There's not really any getting off. And this is what'll make me happy. I just need to do it and let the effects settle in and let the testosterone masculinize me, and that'll be when I'm truly happy.
Lies. Nothing but lies.
On one hand, I was, in a sense, I was happy when the bandages first came off at my first post-op appointment. I thought it would mean that I could be my true self. I was excited to be able to be shirtless in the summer instead of hiding under many layers. But this, on the other hand, too, I was a bit horrified. Immediate post-op results are kind of gory, and dealing with the post-op care was still kind of scary, but I just got through it the best I could.
Child.
When I decided to transition, I was not in a very sound state of mind, to the point where I didn't believe that I was going to live to be 18. I thought something would happen to me, most likely by my own hands. So when I got to 17 and realized, oh, I am going to make it, I, you know, did a lot of introspective thinking, and I was just like, this isn't how I want to live my life. it feels like I'm putting in a lot of effort to try to maintain this facade that I'm a real boy. And I also realized, well, I'm not going to grow past 4'11". And I feel like I'm never truly going to be looked at as like a normal man at that height.
Because those puberty blockers and all the drugs they injected into this young lady, it stunts growth. Would you rather have a short, alive, pretending to be son or a dead, tall daughter? Liars.
They're either going to see me as a teenage boy or some kind of man who has a disorder resulting in growth stunting. I had a new therapist, completely unrelated from the trans thing, that I began seeing when I was 17. And I think she was the first person I told. And she didn't really know how to handle it. You know, she was trained under the affirming model, and this didn't fit within the model. There's no protocol. Even now, there's no billing codes, even in the medical regard, for detransition. For a while, I didn't even know detransition was a thing. But when I was closer to 18, I found the D-trans subreddit. I did lurk and read a lot of the threads and realized that it's not just me. I'm not just like a complete outlier, and I'm not like crazy for this.
No. So many of them are having so many regrets.
I was scared to even admit to myself that I was stopping the testosterone. I tapered myself off and kind of just started slowly lowering my dose and spacing out the shots. I got a call because I was about to age out, since that clinic only handled pediatric patients. And they asked if I wanted a referral to the adult program. And I declined. And they didn't poke or pry or ask any questions. I feel like it was really negligent. This is an egregious case, especially the lack of care for my comorbidities. Mm-hmm. I had doctors telling me that, oh, well, the depression will ease up and the anxiety will ease up once the patient, me, feels more comfortable in their transition and feels like it's progressed enough.
Uh-huh.
I knew that there was a chance my hair would thin, depending on my genetics. I knew that my voice would drop, but I didn't know that in my voice dropping, I can't really scream anymore. I can't talk very loud, especially for long intervals of time. My throat gets kind of sore and just exhausted. The testosterone really damaged my liver at 14 because they were doing frequent labs, blood testing labs, to check my levels. And I guess something was off with my liver enzymes. They suspected that I had been underage drinking, and I hadn't had alcohol at that age. There is no other reason my liver should have been damaged besides testosterone.
Shh. Don't tell mom and dad that that's a potential side effect. Shh.
I have genital atrophy. I have urinary issues. It's almost like I'm a menopausal woman. I was told that I would never be able to chest feed. But what I wasn't told was that among the complications would be nerve pain, which I deal with every day. It sometimes feels like slicing or like an electrical zap. Sometimes it feels like itching, but I can't scratch it because the skin itself is like numb, but the nerves underneath are really erratic. I also was not made aware that I would be left with mammary glands, although they're severed. My nipples are grafted, so it's completely separated. So if I were to get pregnant, I would likely produce some milk, but it would be trapped with no way to get out and cause serious infection. They also did not impress upon me that I could still technically get breast cancer. Once I get older, I would still need to get mammograms. So I was kind of blindsided by these things a bit.
A bit. No, totally. Wish you could see the video. This is a little girl who went through this nightmare. And now she's dressing like a woman. She has long hair. You would certainly identify her as a woman. And yet she's dealing now with all of these health issues. Furthermore, has she received the help that she needs for her other struggles? This entire industry is diabolical. It is promoted from a godless worldview that is perhaps the creme de la creme of expressive individualism. You feel it on the inside. Okay, we're going to get your outside to match your insides. They're science deniers. They're wicked. They're evil. And may we never lose our outrage, because these are not Hollywood stories. These are real people. And while the secular world clearly doesn't love them, we're going to. And with that love, I think it should be accompanied by some righteous indignation. This is Wretched Radio.
And it's now time for your daily Fortis News Breaker production of Fortis Institute. We start in Maine, where the highest court in the state has ruled that a father can keep his daughter out of her mother's church. The dispute centers on a 13-year-old girl in Calvary Chapel, Greater Portland, where her mother is a member. A district judge handed the father sole authority over whether the girl attends that specific church, while leaving decisions about every other religious organization to both parents together. The state Supreme Judicial Court agreed unanimously, saying the order was about harm to the child rather than disapproval of Christian belief. It pointed to one service where the pastor prayed over the custody fight by name and cast the father as an enemy out to persecute his daughter's faith. Liberty Counsel, representing the mother, argues that no judge has any business grading which Bible teachings are psychologically harmful, and that is the question now headed to Washington. The fight over who controls what you're allowed to hear is playing out on a much bigger scale online. X says its safety team uncovered a bot farm of roughly 200,000 inauthentic Chinese accounts, and inside that network, about 200 of them were working one very specific angle: convincing Americans that AI data centers are driving up household electric bills and straining the power grid. Some of the posts were AI-generated cartoons showing data center operators as greedy pigs getting rich off ordinary taxpayers. A study this year from the Institute for Energy Research looked at all 50 states and found no statistical link between data centers and higher electricity prices. And plenty of the opposition to these projects is homegrown and sincere. You don't have to invent an American grievance if you can find one and turn the volume up on it. And foreign bots aren't the only voices online that aren't what they appear to be. A New York Times investigation published recently found political campaigns paying social media influencers to promote candidates, usually without telling viewers that a dime changed hands. One left-wing commentator with nearly 100,000 followers took money from at least seven candidates or their affiliated groups this cycle, and in February, he told his audience that a billionaire running for governor of California wasn't the progressive that he claimed to be. In May, that campaign paid him $21,500, and he decided the man was the strongest progressive in the race. Katie Porter's campaign paid 12 influencers a combined $139,500, including $25,000 for a single post that got deleted once the Times started asking questions. No federal law requires any of this to be disclosed, but the FTC will make you disclose a paid endorsement for skin cream, but not for a governor. And that wraps up today's Fortis News Break. I'm Jimmy Hicks. If you want more, you can download Fortis Plus or sign up to become a Fortis Insider for exclusive daily content. Both can be done at FortisInstitute.org. And don't forget, you can subscribe to Fortis News on your favorite podcast app in order to get these updates daily. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.
Know your church fathers. Justin Martyr was a second century apologist who was converted after seeing the courage and devotion of Christian martyrs. He earned his surname when he was executed for his faith. When asked to renounce his faith, he responded, "No one in their right mind turns from true belief to false belief."
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Before we continue our moral outrage tour, some good news and gratitude. This is Wretched Radio. Thank you very much to everybody who decided to pre-order my latest book titled Go Serve Your King, The Key to Extraordinary Purpose in Everyday Life. You did. We encouraged you to do it. It's pre-sale. I know. It doesn't actually get printed for like a long time, like till December 1st, I think is when it gets shipped. But we encouraged you to pre-order it because, wow, does that make a difference? And because when the booksellers see, hey, people are interested in this book, guess what they do? They push it more. It receives more prominence. It pops up in more people's feeds. And you did. In fact, Jimmy, I sent that email. I don't know who found it here. But after one day on one of the Amazon lists, we were number 4. And another one was also number 4. And then one of them was number 1. For the, you know, they segregate it by, you know, these different categories. Jimmy, you love this. Did you see that Amazon screen grab? I don't know if Matt found that or Jason found that. It was from Amazon. So Go Serve Your King was number 1. Number 5 was Augustine's The Confessions.
Right, I saw that.
His book is okay. If you could just think about that. Can you imagine being on like the top of a bestseller list when the book was written 1600 years ago? That's crazy. What a book. What an enduring tome that is. So grateful that you decided to pre-order Go Serve Your King. Thank you very much for that. If you haven't yet, I would encourage you to please consider doing so. It really makes a very big difference because these booksellers see that. And it increases the visibility of the book, which means more people will be exposed to it, which means more people will be reached by it. So thank you if you did. Would encourage you to consider pre-ordering it now through Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Target, Amazon, Books A Million, wherever you do your book buying business. And thank you if you do. Go Serve Your King, The Key to Extraordinary Purpose in Everyday Life. Now, let's get back to outrage, shall we? Would like to share with you at least a part of the story of a young man who was a part of the transgender contagion. Now, these stories are compellingly done by independentwomanfeatures.com. I can't tell you about the organization, but I can tell you it is clear that they are passionate about hearing these stories because there are real people behind these statistics, real people that are being so harmed. And I think that when we get to hear what's actually happening behind the scenes, I think it should develop moral outrage inside of us, compassion for these people, and I think a rekindled desire to proclaim truth. This ain't right.
I was the first boy in my high school, at least to my knowledge, to start identifying as transgender. Between the time I left after 10th grade and the time my class graduated, 1/6 of the boys in my grade identified as transgender, and a similar proportion continued in the grades below me. You walk down a hallway in Berklee College of Music and you see posters about, oh, we have a trans support group, and these are directions on how to get gender-affirming care. And all of this just complete that's encouraging students to harm themselves. It's everywhere. You can't run from it.
Isn't that nice? Isn't that what university is for? Let's just indoctrinate these kids and mess up their lives.
I had a lot of social difficulties growing up. I didn't know it at the time, and my parents didn't know it at the time, but I was autistic. Generally speaking, I was a very happy-go-lucky kid, very extroverted. Things changed a lot when I went to kindergarten and first grade, because this was the first time in my life where I really experienced physical abuse in any sense. There were a number of days where I would come back home, bloody, torn shorts, all that. And that basically led to me to really close up. I became very anxious. I became very depressed. When I went to 7th and 8th grade, I continued to have a lot of social difficulties. I wasn't bullied physically, but I was called the F-slur on a near daily basis because I looked gay, whatever that means. Fall of 9th grade, I very quickly gained a friend group for the first time in my life who happened to all be girls. Now, one day I came into school and none of them talked to me. And I genuinely didn't know why they all of a sudden stopped talking to me. The next event was about a week or two later. I was on a school trip to see a play. I believe the play was Fun Home. It's a musical. And during this field trip, I was sexually assaulted by an older boy who was, I think, 17 or 18 at the time, junior, senior.
It strikes me, both of these stories that we've heard, school is involved. in this instance, the kids at school, bullying, in this instance, sexual abuse. Mom and Dad, school has always been that way. He talks about the F slur. That word was used constantly when I was a kid. Everybody called everybody that. I'm not sure that there is more today than yesterday, but I think that there are more things that are added on top of it. And that is the encouragement of social media educators. If they think for a second that you are confused, well, they just jump in there and they just start pouring fuel on that confused little flame that's barely flickering so that they can turn it into a forest fire. You need to be aware, Mom and Dad, what's going on at schools.
And so my social support network had disappeared. I'm disconnected from my body. I'm still trying to deal with all of the basically trauma of being the target of homophobic bullying for 2 years straight in middle school. So I joined what was then called the Gay Straight Alliance, because I'm like, these people will probably get what I've gone through and maybe I can talk about it. And instead of talking about homophobia or being gay is cool and okay, instead of that, we would regularly watch videos by this transgender YouTuber called ContraPoints, who is male to female. And this is where I learned about the concept of gender dysphoria and transition and all of these concrete steps. And
learned about it.
Also, that year in health class, we learned about the gender unicorn, and we were asked to kind of place ourselves on that. I did my Googling because I was distressed, and that's what any kid does in my generation. And it's like, I get along better with girls than with boys. And all these symptoms on Google, basically, in 2019 at least, 2018 rather, all lead you towards the answer of trans.
There it is. See how social media works? First of all, in health class, a gender unicorn? Put yourself on the spectrum? That's going on in public schools. Then the confused kids types in, why do I like girls more than boys, or boys, whatever his thing was. Why is that? You are likely transgender. And all of a sudden his feed is populated with this message. You're in the wrong body.
And when you look at these health resources and these videos by these transgender YouTubers, those same grievances are replicated in their words, and they say that transitioning fixed all of that for them. So As a kid, when I was 14, I saw that and I said, well, they have the same problems I did pretty much. They took this step or these series of steps. Why wouldn't that work for me? I started seeing a therapist at Boston Children's because I had basically a mental breakdown. So I was having flashbacks, I was having nightmares. And eventually, I think sometime in the spring, I come out to my therapist at Boston Children's and I'm like, I'm really a girl. I think I'm trans. And she immediately affirms me. She says, oh my God, you're so brave. These are the things you can do. She gave me a referral to the gender clinic. And that summer, at summer camp, I started experimenting with pronouns. Then I noticed that people treat me a lot better if I say my pronouns are they, them. And so I take that as evidence that, oh, I must really be not a man, that I was really meant to be a girl, that I was actually born in the wrong body in some real sense. And
it's like this industrial complex where there's this conspiring together to promote this and push these kids in that direction.
Through 10th grade, I persist with this identity, but I don't really socially transition or take very many steps. I come up to a number of friends, all of whom affirm me, of course.
Yes.
And then I socially transition in my first year of college. I wanted to medically transition for years. I didn't like the effects of puberty. I didn't like my body hair. I didn't like my facial hair. I didn't like the fact that my voice changed. I didn't like the way that people saw me as a man.
That still is mysterious to me. And all I can say is, It must be something that's obviously not right inside, because I can't even think about, okay, how does that work exactly? You feel like you're in the wrong body. You don't like the way that you're made. I don't know what that is, but it's clear. It's confusion. It's outside of what is obvious, natural, scientific, and biblical. And instead of having people to come alongside of him to say, hey, we're going to get you through this. We're going to help you to see it right and to appreciate the way that God made you, which interestingly, in both of these stories, I didn't hear anything about church life. They both apparently have lost their social network and their safety net of friends were gone at school. What about church? What about their involvement there? I'm not hearing that, but what I am hearing is there is a machine out there that is putting kids in it and grinding them up all for their wicked ideology. This is like the cherry on top of expressive individualism. This is Wretched Radio.
Some struggles stay hidden for years. For many Christian women, pornography is one of them, and the shame surrounding it keeps them silent.
If you're listening and this is your struggle, I want you to know that shame and secrecy are not God's will for you.
Out of the Shadows is a three-part series from Fortis Institute hosted by our very own Libby Glosson, and it was made for the woman who believes she's the only one.
If you've written yourself off as someone outside of God's mercy, hear me. You are not too far gone. Sin is real, yes. But so is forgiveness.
Out of the Shadows, streaming right now for free on Fortis Plus with a free study guide to go along with it. You don't have to keep this struggle in the shadows because there is hope and there is forgiveness and there is freedom in Christ. Available right now at fortisplus.org.
Hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. You know, a lot of ministries talk to individuals, and that's fine. But somewhere along the way, the local church gets forgotten. And we believe that to be a big problem. Because the local church is the institution that Jesus promised to build. It's not an afterthought. It's the plan. And that's why we exist at Fortis Institute. We exist to strengthen local churches, not replace them. Everything we create, our podcasts, our videos, all of our resources and teaching, it's all designed to be useful to pastors and small group leaders and church members who want to grow. We're not trying to be your church. As a matter of fact, we're always pointing to your local church. And if that mission is something that resonates with you, would you consider joining us as an ongoing monthly gospel partner? Your support helps us create content that equips the saints and strengthens the body of Christ. And we know you have questions about what that would look like in your life, and we've got answers at fortisinstitute.org. Help us be a part of something that serves the local church. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel. A good majority of us are running two lives. There's the one where you pray and you read your Bible and you go to church, but there's also another life, the one where you go to work and do what you've got to do to cover the bills or try to get your teenager to talk to you. And Todd Friel, well, he doesn't believe that God ever meant for these to be two different lives. His new book is called Go Serve Your King, and he walks through the parts of your life you never think to call spiritual, like your job or your bank account. And he shows you that Jesus is king over all of it. The whole point is being faithful in the house and the job you've already got. Al Mohler read the book, and he said Todd writes with the same energy that he has on the air. And he's right. You can pre-order Go Serve Your King right now at fortisinstitute.org/king. And if you order by November 15th, Todd will mail you a signed book plate for your copy. The book comes out December the 1st. Pre-order now at fortisinstitute.org/king.
Lexicon. There are many words to help us understand the nature of the Bible. Words like plenary verbal inspiration. God inspired every word of Scripture, guiding the human authors as they wrote without violating each man's personality and writing style. In the Bible, we have the very Word of God.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
All of the medical professionals I saw, except when I moved to a new therapist, were explicitly affirming.
Of course they were. This is Wretched Radio. That is Simon Amaya Price. It's a feature film at Independent Woman Features, iwfeatures.com. Oodles of videos there, not just testimonies of people who woke up and realized, yikes, I made a dreadful mistake in pursuing transgenderism. A lot of advocates, a lot of people with very strong voices, very concerned about the dangers, not just to the children, but to women in general, because men going into locker rooms, into bathrooms, lots of really good features there that I hope will stir us. We should have compassion on these people that are going through it. What we've heard consistently is there's a great deal of brokenness. And they get all of these messages from educators. They get it from social media. And they think, well, this is my ticket to happiness. We need to feel horrible for these young people that are broken and confused. And we need to find them and help them and point them in a better direction. And please note this. Don't think for a second that children in church aren't exposed to what these kids have been exposed to on social media. Don't think for a second that that isn't getting into your kid's cell phone or under their computer. Not because they're necessarily pursuing this, but because it just they just keywords. And suddenly their feeds are populated with messages. Are you sure? Maybe you feel this way. Maybe that's why you don't like your parents. And they go about the business of trying to hijack these kids and then mutilate them.
When I brought the subject up with them, whenever I brought it up with a teacher or a professor, they were also affirming and caved into my requests. I talked about the prospects of going on hormones with my therapist, with my psychopharmacologist, with my pediatrician, and there was never a discussion of negative effects or anything. Mm. Only affirmation, only pushing me towards it. I didn't have any adults besides my parents who were neutral and pushed back on this to any degree whatsoever when I talked to them about it. And I was really convinced, not because of my own reasoning, but rather the influence of doctors and activists in the broader culture, that either I was going to medically transition or I was going to kill myself.
There's that lie.
This transition or die narrative, this, you know, dead son, living daughter narrative, I really internalized that, because when your pediatrician says it, and your pediatrician for your whole life, you've built up this relationship, there's a level of trust in that relationship that I had.
Note, pediatrician, because he's just a little boy.
When he asked my dad, would you like a dead son or a living daughter, I believed him. I hadn't put it into words at that time, but I really genuinely believed him. I have to say, though, that I never went to the gender clinic specifically, because my dad never let me.
And attaboy, Dad.
I hated him for it, but I realized that I'm very lucky that he did not let me go.
There you go. Hero Dad, right there. And that's what we have to be to our kids. Yep, they're going to hate you when they're confused. And it's not just sexual issues and transgender issues. And Dad, be strong. Be willing to let your kid be a bit sullen toward you. Got to work through that, of course, and help them understand their sinful thinking. But don't be cowardly. They need you to be strong when they are confused.
I was the first boy in my high school, at least to my knowledge, to start identifying as transgender. Between the time I left after 10th grade and the time my class graduated, 1/6 of the boys in my grade identified as transgender.
Wow. How does that work? Oh, yeah. It's a social contagion.
And a similar proportion continued in the grades below me. So in that way, I bear the responsibility as patient zero in my small private high school in a suburb of Boston. And some of these kids medicalized, and there's a degree to which I bear some guilt for that. Mm. The reason I feel I have a sense of personal responsibility for sort of spreading this virus is that there's a set of terminology in the transgender community. And one of the terms that is used regularly is the term egg, as an EGG. An egg is somebody who perhaps has not yet realized they are transgender, but is really transgender on the inside. And people in the trans community talk about how they can identify and crack eggs.
Mm-hmm.
That process, which you learn how to do on Reddit or in these trans communities, is basically identifying vulnerable kids and convincing them that they are transgender. I did this. I will perhaps offer the only defense that I can in that regard and say that I truly believed that the extent to which I did that, I was doing it because it was good for the people that I convinced were trans. Because I genuinely believed that really inside they were trans, and until they accepted that fact, they would forever live a low quality of life. When I applied to Berkeley, I had to put my pronouns in my application, right? They literally asked for this. It was more clearly systematized where, you know, you were asked your pronouns.
By the way, I'm looking at it on the video. This is the form from Berkeley. Please select an option. She, her, hers, he, him, his. Well, at least we get those on the top. They, them, theirs. How many people you got living in that body? Then you've got, see if I can read the, Zehir, 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 or Zirs. So apparently the singular would be Zehirzer, plural, Herzers. Then you got he, they, and she there. Who's crazy here? I say it's the institutions. You're adults. You're supposed to be educated. You think that there's this many whatever these things are?
Professors are required to respect the pronouns. You walk down a hallway in Berklee College of Music and you see posters about, oh, we have a trans support group, and these are directions on how to get gender-affirming care. And all of this just complete that's encouraging students to harm themselves. And it's like, yeah, it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You can't run from it. And then even if you don't go to college, it's in the media and everybody your age is you know, immersed in it. And you walk down the streets, like, I want to go on a walk and I don't want to be reminded of trans. Haha, joke's on you. There's a trans flag. They're everywhere.
By the way, when I was in Boston, I'm not sure. I think that there's a new pride flag. It's not just the rainbow colors. It's got some sort of a symbol on it. I didn't want to Google it.
So the social dynamics of my transgender identification were a driving force. If my peers were not accepting of transgenderism and gender ideology, I doubt I would have done it, genuinely, because it would have been too hard, too impractical. They basically are able to remove your, control your thoughts, where you no longer have the language to reason yourself out of the cult. I was stuck there for a while, where I would think about it all of the time, but never make any progress because I got stuck in these ideological loops.
Cult.
Desisting and detransitioning, for that matter, is a multi-step process. I think that when you're in a system where it's overwhelming and it's overwhelmingly supportive, you don't have much impetus for change. But if you are in a system where it's overwhelmingly antagonistic to you, as after I got canceled my first year of college, it was, then you have a major impetus for change. In my freshman seminar, the topic of affirmative action came up, and I said, when it was my turn to talk, of course, that I thought affirmative action was stupid, didn't work, disproportionately helps white women, and as opposed to the people it's intended to help. My professor asked me to apologize to the class, and I refused, and I failed the class, and you know, I basically got canceled for the first time back then. All of a sudden, all of the goodwill that had been directed toward me in regards to my transgender identity disappeared overnight.
Hmm. Pickle.
One day you're their favorite person, and you're the bee's knees, and they love you so much. And the moment you say something, even if you're trans, if you say something that's against the prevailing orthodoxy, then all of a sudden you're a Nazi. You go from the right side of history to Nazi overnight, basically.
Wow.
That support of the transgender identity was removed, and I suppose that laid fertile ground for self-reinvention. By the end of the spring of my first year of college, I got to the point where I was like, you know what? The only reason, real, substantive, persistent reason I would have for medically transitioning is because society says I have to do that to be valid, to be trans, to really be a girl or a woman. That's stupid. I'm not going to do that.
Good for you, Simon. And now he claims he's living happily ever after. His dad appears to be in the picture. Well done, Pop. And now he's a very strong advocate to warn people about the social contagion, as you have been hearing. And if we're perhaps going to take something personal out of this, I think from the church perspective, we need to be aware that there can be kids in our congregations that might be struggling with this and confused by this, because we can bring them to church on Sunday, hopefully midweek. Oh, hopefully we're doing things at home with our kids, but that pales in comparison to the amount of messaging that they receive from social media, certainly from public school education, from their peers, and from billboards, flags. It's incessant messaging, which means if we know that this is indeed a contagion, we need to be aware of it to battle it, and to make sure that we are getting involved in our kids' lives. I'm talking about our kids at church, to make sure that they are thriving, to make sure that they do have a safety net and that it is a safe place. And this is the place that you can trust, not social media. May our outrage never abate. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.